I think we're going to have more than we've been averaging. We had more this morning in our 8:30 service, and so that's great to have you with us. I want to let you know, too, that we're in the midst of thinking about assembling and why we should assemble and why that is important. And last week we studied from Hebrews chapter 10, and that lesson is available on our YouTube and church website if you'd like to listen to that lesson. But this lesson is part two of this, where we're going to think about why we should assemble, and we're going to do a survey of reasons early Christians assemble. When you think about this topic, as I mentioned last week, it's one that people have been exploring and discussing a lot of in the last several months, because we've had to rethink, what is it to assemble? What does it mean to be a church member? What is my role with the church? If you go back to basically the 50s and 60s, when campaigns, evangelistic campaigns, got to going across our nation, and the Crusades would emphasize people just being saved, and then they would say, join the church of your choice. Now we understand, and have studied other times, about how there is a problem there, first of all, in the method they're teaching about salvation, because there's nothing mentioned about baptism, often maybe not even repentance, just simply say a prayer and you're saved. And we understand the New Testament does not teach that. Also, then they would add this, just join, or they would encourage you to join, a church of your choice. And maybe unwillingly or unknowingly, that has fostered a belief across our nation that you can be a Christian and not be connected with the church. And then as we've played out the pandemic over the last 6 months, this has even been more prominent. People talking about, you can be a Christian, you can worship on your own, and you don't have to assemble, you don't have to be connected with the church. And we understand that the Bible teaches is that when you become a Christian, you're added to His body, His church. And then we have a responsibility of being connected with one another. And so we have always had a strong teaching about why it's important to be in worship, why it's important to be involved with the church, to be doing things with the church, to be caring about one another. Because when you become a Christian, you become a part of God's family, God's church. But this has been challenged. This has been challenged. And it's important across our nation. Many churches of Christ, many Christians have thought, you know what? Maybe we should just do online exclusively. Maybe I don't have a need to come back. Or there have been many who have drifted away, sadly, and have no longer seen the need to assemble. And so we have a significant number who have not even come back in any way or have withdrawn from any type of connection with the church. This has caused us then, and it's caused me to preach these two sermons, in thinking about our theology, our biblical convictions on what does it mean to be a church member? What does it mean to assemble, and why should I assemble, and what's the importance in that? Last week in Hebrews chapter 10, we noticed that we are to assemble to encourage one another, to provoke one another to love and good works, that we have a responsibility to assemble as a commandment because God knows that's what's best. Now, I've been talking about virtual worship and what that means. Is virtual worship, is it just as good as assembling? Or can it replace our assembling? This is one of my favorite pictures from our time we were online. Someone sent me of a cat putting her paw on my face. Because apparently she got tired of listening to me. And I'm not going to ask a show of hands, but probably some of you did too. You have the mute button, you have the power button, you can just turn that off. What is it about assembling that makes it significant? We're going to be talking about that. Now, I want to begin by thinking about what is the meaning of church, and then we'll survey the Bible on that. The meaning of church. The term in the New Testament is the term ekklesia. You've heard that probably, which refers to a called out or an assembly. The term was used throughout the Greek world to talk about any kind of assembly. For example, if you were going to have an assembly to discuss the upcoming tax law, you would say, we're going to have an assembly at the court square at 10 o'clock, and you would use the term ekklesia. Or if you're going to have an assembly to have a pep rally for our team going off to play in the sporting contest, you would say, we're going to have an ekklesia here at the local gymnasium to cheer them on. When Jesus came, he said, I'm going to create, Matthew 16, 18, I'm going to build my ekklesia, my assembly. I'm going to build my people who are called out of the world, who are going to be my disciples as a body, as a family. The church involves the idea of a called out assembly. It's not just an individual, but it is being a part of a group. I'm going to build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And that's why we teach our children that the church is not the, what church? Church is not the building. Yeah, y'all know the answer. It's not the building. What is the church? The people. The people. The church is the assembly of the people. Notice another word that's used in the New Testament. It's only used once. Synagogue, genagogue, which is similar to the term you're familiar with of the Jewish synagogue, which simply means together, together. And so it's a gathering place. And so the church was a gathering together. When we see the church talked about, it is referred to as an assembly of people, not the building, not individuals spread out as an individual Christian, not connected with one another, but it is people connected together. Thus, we could define church as the assembly of believers formed into a family or body. In essence, a church must meet in order to be a church. If we weren't connected, if we weren't meeting, if we aren't doing things together and trying to have a joint, for example, treasury, a joint worship services, joint ministry services, joint activities together, then we wouldn't be a church. We would just be individual Christians. And this is why it's so important to emphasize that when you become a Christian, you need to make sure you are always connected with the local church. Because it's in the church that we are to rejoice with those who rejoice. We're to weep with those who weep. We are to edify one another, encourage one another, build one another up, rebuke one another, exhort one another, sing to one another. All these one another commandments, love one another. We are to do all these things to one another. And so the church, in essence, must meet in order to be a church, or it's just individual believers. Throughout the New Testament, we see that the church is spoken of as always the people who have come together for the purpose of doing Christ's word and Christ's will. Now let's survey the New Testament. Let's turn to the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 2, we'll find the early church beginning. And I invite you to just flip along with me as we go through Acts. And in Acts chapter 2, when the church had started there on the day of Pentecost, verse 42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. Verse 46, day by day they were attending to the temple together, breaking bread in their homes. They received their food with glad and generous hearts. They were meeting together, not always in an entire church assembly, but they were meeting with one another even daily. They were even selling their goods and providing to those who have a need. A church is concerned about the needy of its members. It wants to meet the needs of those who are suffering, of those who are maybe physically in need, of those who are emotionally suffering. The church cares about those things. The early church, they were praying for one another. They were teaching one another. They were partaking in the Lord's Supper together, and they were partaking in fellowship meals together. Later on in chapter 4, we see a similar thing when the apostles are set free from prison in verse 23. They went to their friends and reported what the chief priests and elders had said to them, and when they heard it, they lifted their voices together to God. They're going to be together lifting their voices to God. In verse 31, when they had prayed, the place in which they were gathered together was shaken. They're going to pray regularly together. In Acts chapter 5, we see in verse number 12, many signs and wonders were done by the apostles, and they were all together in Solomon's portico. They were all coming together. The church was meeting. They were experiencing miracles here by the apostles, and they were hearing the teaching of the apostles. In chapter 9, we see that they were all together. And I want to go on to chapter 11. In chapter 11, we see that when they had heard about the brethren in Antioch, they are going to send down Barnabas in verses 22 and following. And Barnabas is going to go to the church in Antioch, and he saw the grace of God, verse 23. He was glad, and he exhorted them to remain faithful to the Lord. He goes and gets Saul, verse 26, and they're going to spend a whole year there teaching a great many people. The church was constantly gathering for teaching, gathering for assembly. In Acts chapter 12, the church has an issue. The issue is Peter is in prison. And so verse 12, they gather at Mary's house, the mother of John Mark, and they were many who were gathered together, and they were praying. They were praying. In chapter 13, just like Joel talked about, they saw a need to send out missionaries. So the church gathered together. They prayed, they fasted, and they set apart Barnabas and Paul for the work to which they had been called. You see what the church is doing. We see not only an organized once a week assembly, which we find here in Acts chapter 20, when Paul will arrive in Troas, and he will wait from Monday to Sunday so that he could be there with the church on the Lord's day. In verse number 7, on the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, the purpose of the church was to come together, to assemble together, to break bread. And then Paul is going to preach to them until midnight. Notice that there was the organized assembly each first day of the week. But we also see them having multiple assemblies during the week. We would see them, for example, having prayer services. We see them doing smaller fellowship with one another in Acts chapter 2, going out to eat together. In their day, going to one another's homes to eat. We see them, for example, having times of crisis where they have urgent needs of prayer. For example, I don't think it was in the bulletin that week, we're going to have a prayer on Thursday night at Mary's house. I think it was probably more like, guys, Peter has been put in prison. They're going to put him to death tomorrow. Can you come to Mary's house? Spread the word. As many people as can come, come. We're going to pray. We're going to pray. Stay as long as you can. We're going to meet and pray. The church gathered and prayed. You see, we see all kinds of different services in the early church. One thing is in common through all these services. They were meeting together. You see, what we find is that when we're talking about the church, we're talking about individual Christians. And so when I hear that there's a prayer service for the church, then I should think, it's for me. When I hear that said that there's a volunteer activity, that we need someone to volunteer to do this, and they need a member of the church to do that, I should think, well, if I could do that, if I had the opportunity to do that, then I should do that because they're needing someone to do that in the church, and I'm in the church. I'm a part of the church. Or if we hear the church is going to be assembling and having worship, then I should think, well, I'm a part of the church. I should be there. The church is for all. You see, it's important to see how the early church was constantly meeting together. Now when we turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, we see in verses 17 through 20, when they were coming together, that they were coming together, and it should be for the purpose of partaking of the Lord's Supper and worshiping together. But rather they had, verses 17 through 22, they had divisions amongst them so that they were divided because they were not respecting one another. In fact, Paul would say it's even better if they didn't come together because of their divisions and the problems they have. And he says, verse 33, when you come together to eat, wait for one another, be respectful of one another. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, so that when you come together, it will not be for judgment. Our services are serious. In fact, they were partaking of the Lord's Supper in an unworthy manner, so that some of them were even sick amongst them, Paul says. When we need to understand that when we're talking about the church, we need to relate to one another in a loving, kind, unified way. And our purpose should be together for that. And if not, we can bring judgment upon ourselves. When Paul goes on further, he talks about in chapter 12, as we have often studied, about how the church is like a body. Verse 12, for just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many are one body, so it is with Christ. And then he says this, we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slave or free, all were made to drink of the one Spirit. We have those who have more money. We have those who have less money. We have those who are older. We have those who are younger. We have those who come from different backgrounds, maybe different states that they grew up in, different experiences. We have those who have lived here their entire life. We have those who work in this profession and others who do this profession. We have all kinds of different backgrounds. But everyone, just like they had Jews and Greeks, slave and free, but in the church, everyone was a part of the body. You know, sometimes it's often talked about in thinking about church growth and things that we should not have a Mickey Mouse church. Mickey Mouse church, what does that mean? Think about, everybody knows the Mickey Mouse symbol, right? You got his head here with an ear here and an ear here. And when you think about that, this could be the main church, and then you got, sometimes people want to add other ears on. And it's like this is the ear of the youth group. This is the ear of the senior adult group, or this is the ear of the young adult group, or this is the ear of, and we have these different groups. And it's like these other groups at times can even become where like they function separately apart from the whole. Brethren, that is not what we should have. It's not what we should ever aim to have. The youth group is not a separate ear. They're a part of the church. The senior adult group is not a separate ear. They're a part of the church. The young adult group is not a separate ear. They're a part of the church. Every member is a part of the church. Paul says the honorable parts and the less honorable parts, those who maybe are leaders in the church and those who maybe have a lesser role in the church, those who are teachers in the church versus those who don't ever want to get up in public, those who have a lot of money and give a lot to the contribution versus those who give their two mites because it's all they can give. You see, all of those are members of the church. Someone say, well, I've been a part of the church for my whole life. Yeah, you're a member of the church. We're thankful for your service. But you know what? The person who was baptized last week, you know what they are? They're a member of the church. Every Christian is a member of the assembly, the church. And that's what Paul is emphasizing with his body analogy. Every one of them deserves honor and love and concern and encouragement and edification. And that's why we assemble. Because when we assemble, we remind ourselves that we are not alone. We are assembling together because we are the church. And we're one another people. And so in chapter 14, he talks about why we assemble and why it's important to assemble. And he says that we should assemble for edification, verse 5, that the church may be built up. And then down in verse number 23, I'll pick up, verse 26, what then, brothers? When you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, an interpretation. Let all things be done for building up. Why do we come together? Why do we need to assemble? So that we can edify and encourage each other. It's what Joel was saying when he was making the announcement about how we don't need to be spiritual bankrupt and how we need to make sure we're having as many opportunities as possible and taking advantage of those so that we can increase our faith and grow in our faith and not lose our faith. One of my real concerns, and I spoke to this last week, is that people, because of this, will lose their soul. That people will become detached. That it's like that old, I used this in the 8:30 service last week. I didn't use it in this one. I thought this is a good illustration, so I'm going to use it on y'all. Y'all know the old youth ministry illustration, right? When you're sitting around the campfire. Where you go up and you take a stick and you knock a little of the coal, a little of the wood, and a little of the embers off to the side. And it was red, glowing hot when it was in the big fire. And the youth minister says, now watch it, watch that coal, and what happens to the coal? And of course that coal over time, that ember is going to begin very quickly to go from bright orange or red, hot, to pretty soon it turns dark and there's no fire left in it. And you say to the youth group, why did that piece of wood go out? And of course the obvious answer is it was separated from the rest of the wood, from the rest of the fire. It was taken away from it. And the answer then, the implication is that is exactly what happens to a Christian who is separated, who is taken away, who's not a part of the assembly, is that their fire within them for the faith grows cold, grows distant, and sometimes goes away. You see, that's why Paul taught the Corinthian church in verses 33 and following that it's important that that we know that all these things are going on in all the churches. What he had taught was being done in all the churches. All the churches were assembling. And this was the practice of all the churches. And so the idea of church assembling was something that was done throughout the entire New Testament churches. And so the early church put a priority on assembling in order to worship, in order to edify, in order to encourage, in order to conduct church business. And so it may not always be the entire assembly. For example, we may say, we need 10 men to go help Brother so-and-so move this afternoon. Or we have a widow lady whose yard needs mowing and she's had some problems. We need a couple men to go by and mow that. That's something that the church is doing, and maybe you're not the one who's able to do it. We've had mission trips where we say we want people to go to El Salvador, and the rest of our church sends them, but they go as a representation of the church. And we have Bible classes, and we have services of different kinds. Sometimes we may have a prayer assembly. On Wednesday nights, we have Bible classes where the focus is on teaching the Bible. Next Sunday, we're going to begin our Sunday Bible classes where the focus is on teaching the Bible. Then we have our collective worship where we're here to worship. And then we have sometimes business meetings where there needs to be some business discussed at the church. We have all kinds of assemblies of the church. And what you need to know is you are to be a part of those. That's important for you to realize. And that we'll never replace those things with the virtual methods. You know, it's the case that we could save millions, probably the church across just America. We could save billions probably. And I thought about this when we were all online. If we just sold all of our buildings, let's just sell all of our buildings. Let's not build any more new buildings. And let's just do it exclusively online. And everybody watch it at home. We won't have to worry about church buses and church buildings and classroom space. Why do we need all this classroom space? We'll just do it on Zoom. Let's just save billions of dollars across America. And of course, schools have discussed the same thing, right? And we could just do away with all the brick and mortar school buildings and do it all online. And academically and spiritually, everybody that has had those experiences says what? It's not the same. It's not as good as. It is fine for an expediency. It's fine in times of necessity. It has its place, but it will never replace It will never replace the purpose of assembling. It will never replace it spiritually, because here's why, guys. God designed it that way. God designed it that we need one another. We need to come together to be a body. We need to encourage one another, exhort one another. We need one another's presence. We need one another's love. We need one another's encouragement. We need to sing, not to hear our own voices, right? You know, we don't need to just hear our own voice. We need to hear other people's voice. Especially today, my voice is terrible. We don't need to just hear one another, or hear ourselves, or watch a lesson. We need to be a part of the lesson. We need to be a part of the church. And so it's so important to realize that the church must put a priority on assembling. Let me close with three thoughts to help draw this to a conclusion. Three questions, or two questions and one thought. First question is this: does partaking of the Lord's Supper satisfy the command to assemble? We have these little communion things.
I appreciate how everybody was focused on once we were not able. Let me go to this microphone, Joseph. My mic went dead. I appreciate how when we went to back in, had to go online, the emphasis that people took on still getting the Lord's Supper. And Christians understand that we need to protect the Lord's Supper. But let's understand that me just taking the Lord's Supper and maybe spending 5, 10, 15 minutes and doing that on a Sunday just to satisfy that command individually is not what God had intended. When we're able, and we need to always understand that we need to teach our kids this, that it's important to understand that we can sometimes satisfy, all right, I did that, but it's not really doing that. God intended for us to assemble to protect the Lord's Supper as a body. He intended for us to take it in thinking about one another and examining our own lives. And He intended for us to do that not solely alone, but also with other acts of worship, with our singing, with our preaching, with our contribution. That it is not just, all right, I did the least thing possible, and I can check that off. And so, no, it does not satisfy the command to assemble, and we should not elevate that and say that's all we need to do, and we're good. Secondly, let me say this. Is worshiping virtually just as good or the same as meeting together in person? And I think if I've been able to communicate well at all, you would know that I'm going to answer that question from this sermon. No, that it's not. That it has a place. And we're thankful for that opportunity that it gives. But we also need to emphasize that we should not fall into a habit of thinking we can just do it this way and then we'll have the rest of the day. Or we want to head to the lake today, so let's just watch it on the way there and then we'll have the rest of the day together. Brethren, we need to understand that it will never be just as good as or the same as assembling, because your presence is important at the assembly. In the cities especially, there's a lot of talk about, what, should we have Sunday nights and Wednesday nights in person because people have to drive so much and 30 minutes there, 30 minutes back, a lot of traffic. Well, I'll just stay home and watch that online. The problem is attendance often drops when people watch it online. The second problem is you're not able to be with your church family. Just watching it is not nearly the same. Now let me communicate this last statement very well so that there's not a misunderstanding. So that there's not a misunderstanding about what I've said. In Luke 13, verse 15, Jesus speaking here, He says this: "You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it?" He says sometimes you got to go water your ox on the Sabbath day. You got to untie it, go water it. Even though that was against their laws there, but He said you still did it. And then in chapter 14, verse 5, "Which of you having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on a Sabbath day will not immediately pull him out?" The old ox in the ditch analogy. He says, if you got an ox in the ditch, you got a son in the ditch, what are you going to do? You're going to go get him out on Sabbath day. What's the point? There are justifiable reasons for not obeying a law at times. There's justifiable reasons for not doing what God desires us to do. At times we can't reach the ideal. We can't reach the desire. So we have to settle for a lesser. That's just the way it is. Sometimes you can't have the ideal, the main desire. You have to settle for a lesser, an expediency, something that is of necessity for a time. But brethren, here's the danger in that. Don't allow what is necessary for a season in your life to become the norm for your life. We've got to make sure that we emphasize to our youth, we emphasize to all of our own selves, that it's important, wherever I am, to be connected at the relationship level with the local church. And that we'll never satisfy God's desires through a screen and through solely doing things individualistically. We've got to be involved with the church. And so let us keep that in mind. To not make what is temporary because of maybe work, because of sickness, because of maybe a need in an individual time. Not allow that to become the norm for all times. This morning, if you're not a child of God, let me encourage you to put Christ on in baptism, but to become a new Christian, to become a child of God. If you need to rededicate your life and come back to the Lord, then please come as together we stand and sing.